Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Menachem Ganak, who is the CEO of the Kashrus Division of the Orthodox Union. And it's a pleasure to have you on the program. How are you doing, Rabbi Ganak?
It's a pleasure to be with you, Steve.
Absolutely. So we, you know, what we try to do is we always look at the Jewish action, and we put in articles about interesting people that you know that are in the Jewish scene, and of course there's a list. And actually, in the next edition that's coming out, you wrote a beautiful article about Rabbi Belsky Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Livracha, and we're going to talk a little bit about it so that people get a more of an insight. You know, they read the article, and obviously, you know, the article kind of captures a little bit, I think, what Rabbi Belsky was all about. But what we try to do in just a few minutes is maybe talk about some other aspects. So one of the questions that I had really was, I think people don't always understand, what is the role of the posek at the OU? What does that mean, you know, from a practical point of view?
Well, obviously issues come up, halachic issues come up. Many of them have been resolved. Some of the, you know, things become redundant. But there are issues that are constantly coming up, and we need a psak on them. And we turn, I mean, the people who are working at the OU themselves, the rabbinical coordinators who handle the various companies, they themselves are, you know, in their own right, Tamid HaChachamim. But when these issues, significant ones, come up, we turn to Rabbi Belsky, Rabbi Schechter, and for resolution. We also have within our office, so like the Safra, the diner, who writes down the notes and prepares material, that's Rabbi Eli Gersten. And we have all of this codified.
This what's codified, is it available just internal? It's an internal document, or is it available to outside people?
It's primarily an internal document. We've made it available to Talmid Chachamim and to yeshivas, some issues that come up. And of course, when issues come up, we can generate a memo explaining what the position is.
Okay, so that's really. So Rabbi Belsky, Rabbi Schechter's role, of course, and maybe people don't know, but your role also is when issues come up, they will actually go to you. These are new issues that perhaps were never discussed before, but things that were discussed and were decided, more or less, you know, there's a mesorah for that, and the rabbinical coordinators can then move on that, correct?
Yes, but, you know, every issue that comes up, you know, when a shiloh comes up, it always, you know, has to be reviewed again. Each thing has its own idiosyncrasies, its specific nuance, and like in every shaila in halacha, in every context.
Right, everyone has to look at it individually. One of the things that I think that I always thought about was, how long did Rabbi Belsky actually work for the OU?
It was almost 30 years.
30 years, really? Unbelievable. How did he come to the OU? How did that happen?
Well, you know, I actually invited him to come to the OU. And the first time I really dealt with him, we were together on a boat, which was in New Jersey Harbor, which was bringing in, these were big tankers bringing in palm oil and so on. And there were different issues which actually we dealt with just recently again, in terms of other issues, if they're tallow and non-kosher, fats, adjacent tankers, holding oil, palm oil and so on, coming from the Far East. And I remember Rabbi Belsky going down into these tankers are huge, and each of their holding tanks that are in it, or holding containers, are the size of a house or larger. And he wanted to see, you know, what it's like, calculate shishim, and he just went down into the belly of this boat to look at it. He went down, I remember Rabbi Gruber was with him, and he just impressed me how he was so hands-on, how he was able to calculate the different, you know, what shishim is, the thickness of the walls, and so on, and because he had a tremendous, both mathematical mind and, you know, scientific orientation, which was very rare. So he was tremendous Yediyah Satorah in all Chelke Shulchan Aruch, but also a very curious mind, and was interested in science and all these different things, which made him really quite unique.
Yeah, no, there's no question he was a very unique and incredible person. So tell me a little bit about your personal relationship. I know you had obviously an official position with him, and he was at the OU one day a week, but was there any kind of personal relationship between the two of you?
No, we became very good friends. This person I admired very much. didn't necessarily agree with everything, every position that he took, but I knew that it was taken with tremendous passion, integrity, and a lot of intelligence. So, you know, he was within the confines of the Customs Department, obviously far beyond that, but he was very beloved and very, very respected.
And he was really, I mean, in a way, you know, I don't want to break down worlds because I don't like these artificial barriers that people try to put up, okay? But, you know, he kind of is associated with a little bit more of the Haredi world, let's say. And what did that actually mean to the OU? I mean, was it important for the OU and OU Kashas to have someone like Rabbi Belsky as one of the poskim? And where does that lead us, you know, in the future?
Well, I think when I first came to the OU, which is 1980, I think the general perception, which wasn't completely accurate, was, you know, the OU, you know, some of the Rabbonim who were working with, had mixed pews or separate, didn't necessarily have separate seating shoes and things like that. So one of the things that when we started hiring, we if you look at the RCs, we have almost 60 working in the office, you'll see that it's a United Nations of different yeshivas from Lakewood, from Chaim Berlin, from Tov Adas, from Nei Yisrael, from Yeshiva University. And I think that gave people a sense of comfort when they saw who these people are, people they know, and that they're, you know, both very serious Talmidei Chachamim. And Al Gabehem, when Rabbi Belsky was there, and he was the Rosh Yeshiva in Tov Adas, and was so highly regarded, I think that also gave people a tremendous sense of confidence. You know, so beyond, but of course, beyond the political, you know, dimension that he represented in terms of bridging these bridges, but of course, he brought this, as I mentioned before, this enormous expertise and knowledge, both halachic and practical, which was just tremendously important.
There's no question about it that, you know, he was a person, a very dynamic figure. And he had this fascination with science and mathematics and so on. Did he encourage others to do this, or this was all self-taught? How did this come about?
He was really an autodidact. This was really self-taught. I mean, they mentioned that his spaydim, you know, he was torn about whether to go to college or not. But he had heard from Baron Cutler that he should, you know, people should sit and learn all the time. And he won a state scholarship, and he just was still torn about what to do it. And he asked for a delay. So the next year, he asked for a delay again, if they could postpone it, but they couldn't do it more than once. But and he had one of the highest grades, I think, recorded in the state scholarships that year. But it was pure curiosity. For example, he knew astronomy. He was fascinated by astronomy. They tell the story that once he was in Camp Aguda, and he was walking in the woods with his masmidim. He looked up in the sky, and there was a star formation or something else. I'm not sure exactly what it was, which he hadn't recognized. And he later, afterwards, they called NASA, and NASA said they had noticed it as well. Because of this, he was, you know, when all these obscure Gemaras that deal with astronomy and Kiddush HaChodesh and so on, he was the advisor to Artsko in terms of explaining all these things. But it wasn't just astronomy; it was lots of different disciplines, and not just science, but also history. And he would reference it very often.
I see. Interesting. Did he encourage other people to do the same thing, or was it just?
I don't think he necessarily did. It was just his interest. But he did. I'm told that when he's in Camp Aguda, he would explain these, at least in terms of astronomy and other things, to the, to the masmidim who were there in his program.
And I know that you mentioned in the article that you wrote about, which was, by the way, a really, really, really beautiful article. And I enjoyed reading it. I'm sure all the readers are going to really get a little insight into who Rav Belsky was. But you mentioned that sometimes he would get himself into trouble. So what did you? Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, I don't know if I used exactly that phrase. But, what you know, he was a very principled person. And he was, you know, if he thought there was an avla, an injustice, So he pursued it, whether it was in the Din Torah or other places. And it was that sense, that pursuit of justice can, you know, obviously can rankle other people. And he just took principal positions. It was never to his, you know, to his monetary or any kind of benefit. He just did it because he was thought it was the right thing. And he cared about the most forlorn people within our community. People didn't have a place to stay. People who everybody would reject. He invited him into his home. And his Bebetzin was a real Eishes Chayil, you know, took care of these kind of people. So it was that kind of concern, obviously, Yisrael. And different people recall that once there was a boy who, the camp went on a trip. It was to Niagara Falls, and this boy was couldn't walk, but he was disabled. So they said, listen, we're going to go down some deep crevice and so on. You're not going to be able to go on this, and he'd have to stay back. And so anyhow, they went on this into Niagara Falls, and they. Lo and behold, comes Rabbi Belsky, who was very, very tall and very, very strong, with this boy on his back. No, and you know the park rangers or whatever it was at Niagara didn't want to let him come down. But he says, no, this boy, you know, I can handle it. But that's the kind of thing that sort of, which for us is quite extraordinary, but was very standard for Rabbi Belsky.
Right, and he was involved in some very major kashrus questions over his time, and I know that just in the last few years there had been some major ones. So maybe you talked a little bit about Nikur and about the deers and that situation, but I think there were probably one or two others that maybe would be interesting for people to hear about, where he actually took a lead position and changed or actually enabled Klal Yisrael to have kashrus in a way that people didn't think that was possible. Could you elaborate on one or two things like that?
Well, you know, again, this is just his scientific orientation. Well, there was an issue about, you know, we had a shechita in Goshen, New York. The name of the company was Musicon of deer venison. At the time, and venison was being served in some of the restaurants, and he was, you know, he figured out, first of all, there's a shaila, you know, the halacha by a chaya, deer, is that it has to be chelek ha-chavayim, the hindquarters.
Right.
So the sciatic nerve, the gid ha-nosha, is also like it is in a behemoth. However, the chelev, the forbidden fats, are permitted in a chaya. So the question is, we have a tradition that we, in certain communities, that we don't do nikur on the chelek ha-chayim, that we don't do porging and separate in the hindquarters. Some people do, some people don't. Different communities in Europe have different minhagim about it. But so he asked Rav Elyoshev about this, whether we can, first of all, do nikur on the chelek, because is the reason we don't do it in general, so would exclude even chaya? Or is only because the chela of the forbidden fats, which is so severe, because it's a chorus, as opposed to the sciatic nerve, the gidanosha, which is only in isa lav. So he was the one who figured out a way. After Rav Elyoshev said that he doesn't think, since it wasn't an established meaning in America one way or the other, that at least if it's on deer and there's no chelev, that would be okay. But how do you do it? And he spoke to surgeons, and he worked with different scalpels to figure out how to do the nikur in a fashion so that you don't destroy, while still taking out the gid hanosha, but the best cuts of meat in the hindquarters would still be preserved.
Right, and he was involved in the fish situation also, wasn't he? Where they had a whole big issue.
There was an issue in terms of fish about whether some people began to say that some of the worms or insects, Anisakis, that are, you know, that live in some of the fish, whether it's, you know, all the common fish that we're talking about, would that was that us? And there was a big brouhaha about it. Rabbi Belsky said that he, first of all, had tradition from his Rebbe, because he learned both by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, but also by Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and she was by Rabbi Moshe. The Rabbi Moshe thought it was a Dover Pasha, that it was Mutter, as is the din in Shulchan Aruch. And Rabbi Belsky then also did some scientific research about it, sent some of the people in my office, Rabbi Goldberg and others, to meet with the different scientists at the Museum of Natural History to analyze what kind of insects these were, the Anisakis. And he thought emphatically that it was Mutter. It was very much at the time on the line or at the edge which way the general community would go. Were absent Rabbi Belsky's affirmative and strong position about it, there's no question that whole kinds of fish, flounder and herring and certain kinds of and salmon and so on, people would stop eating it. So we owe Rabbi Belsky a big part of our diet.
Right, I was going to say that. People don't even understand that. So anyway, listen, it was great talking to you, and I just want to say that you end the article, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thought. You say like this: he was a man of steel cloaked in the most delicate, gentle velvet. That's exactly who he was. So, Yehi Zichro Baruch, thank you for writing the article, Rabbi Ganak, and I'm sure all the readers of the Jewish Action are going to appreciate it, and when they click on and they'll listen to the interview, they'll get a further insight. So thank you so much for everything you do, and it was a pleasure talking to you.
A pleasure.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye. Be well. Bye-bye.